Hi, and welcome to the Making the Media podcast. My name is Craig Wilson. Thanks for taking the time to join us, whether you're a long-time listener or you're listening in for the first time. At the start of this season of the podcast, we spoke with Mark Harrison, the chief executive of the industry body, the DPP, who had just produced a detailed report on the future of news. 6 months on, the DPP recently held the European Broadcasters Summit, a two-day event which took place in Berlin in Germany, and it brought together leading broadcasters with the industry's vendor community to discuss some of the biggest challenges facing the sector. The DPP have now released their report on what they discovered, and so we asked Mark to rejoin us to share their findings. I began by asking him to outline the background to the event.
It actually came about when a number of the DPP's European broadcaster members said to me that they really wanted our help in convening a session that would enable them to have peer-to-peer sharing and learning. And then, ideally, that they could carry that peer-to-peer sharing into a conversation with the vendor community. And they very explicitly said, we do not want a conference style event. We do not want an event in which there are people sitting on panels on platforms. We want something which is going to enable kind of deep sharing and knowledge building. And so out of that, we designed an event that was workshop based. And that was the case last year. And this year, we took it even further. It made it entirely workshop-based for 2 days. We spend about two-thirds of the first day in workshops just with the broadcasters themselves. And these are very senior-level executives, CTO level, all their direct reports. And we work with them on six topics that they have told us in advance are of great interest to them. And we find areas of commonality and difference. And then we take the findings from those conversations into workshops with the vendor community and explore them, you know, again and even further. So it's a really, you know, deliberately designed sort of intimate event, getting people into face-to-face conversation over 2 days.
So Okay, well, sort of full disclosure here. So I attended the event. So Mark, as you know, that I was involved in some of the sessions. I wonder if it's worthwhile outlining just how it works in practice, because one of the things that struck me as being very interesting about it was that you had that, you know, half day, first of all, with the broadcasters before the vendors came in. So how important is it to have that discussion to flesh out, if you like, those themes that you've identified before the vendors then come in to then contribute to it?
Yeah, it's really important, actually, because, you know, you've got, in this case, we had 20 different broadcasters from all around Europe. Some are public service, some are commercial, some are big, some are small. And so if we just dive straight in, I think it'd be quite difficult for us to find our feet and find a focus for conversation, because you do need to work out amongst them, you know, what are the areas of commonality? You know, what are the intersecting points in for such different businesses with some quite different concerns on the face of it? So what we do with them is we start out by looking at the kind of opportunity space around any particular topic area. So, you know, why is it that they're so focused on this topic area? What are they seeking to achieve? What are the benefits they're looking for in their businesses? And working with them, we end up extracting the five most important opportunities, you know, as agreed, like by a poll, in fact, amongst them. And then having done that, we then look at the challenges that are getting in the way of delivering some of those opportunities. And again, we surface what are the primary challenges So that then when the vendors come into the room, we can be a bit more focused about what it is that the broadcasters want to achieve and what it is that's getting in the way.
So there were six different topics that were chosen, Mark, and I'd like to explore, you know, each of them in a bit of detail. So the first one was about, you know, IP workflows and about the IP, you know, production strategy that that perhaps broadcasters needs. So when you're having the conversation with them, because one of the things I think about IP is that since everyone's been talking about it for a number of years, everyone's focused on what is going to be the standard. And I think the reality we're finding is there's probably not going to be a standard. So how do you start when you have that kind of conversation to begin to explore the challenges that they're facing?
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that that did come out. So it was IP contribution and production that we were looking at. And you know, what we found amongst the group was that we had some broadcasters that have already implemented SMPTE ST2110. There are some that are haven't yet but are planning to. And there are some who have done it and kind of wish they hadn't. And there are some that aren't even planning to. You know, there is really the full spectrum. And you know, what emerged from the conversation was that actually being focused on a particular standard is not really what this conversation's about. And that maybe in some respects, the industry has been a bit distracted in recent years by the discussion around, oh, you know, the move to 2110, as if this is kind of an inevitable upgrade that's going to happen from SDI. This is what we're going to do. We're all going to move to 2110. Have you moved there yet? It's kind of been the conversation in the last few years. And really what this group of broadcasters were saying was, no, we need to think about what we're trying to achieve out of having an IP production strategy. What's the purpose? What matters about it? Because that's what's going to tell us what we need to do. And then we can look at, you know, what the appropriate technologies are to deliver to that strategy.
Because one thing that I thought was striking in some of the discussion sessions was there was a bit of a sense that the industry is doing the same things, but just in slightly different ways. But they're still doing the same things. And as a consequence, they're perhaps not realizing the benefits that some of these technologies and some of these newer ways of thinking and organizing, we'll talk about that in a little while as well, could actually bring. Was that something you got a sense of from the discussions that you had?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, in some respects, there are some themes in our industry that just never change, aren't there? There's the one about, it's not about technology, it's about people. That's one of them. And another one is, don't think about the technology, think about the workflow. And if you don't change the workflow, you don't really change your business. That definitely came through strongly again. And to the huge credit, I think, of the European broadcaster community, they're very self-critical about this. They're very aware. You know, they volunteer themselves that they really struggle to get their businesses to consider the potential benefits of new workflow, or indeed how they could better deliver benefit if they did change workflow. And so full marks for recognizing it, but there's still many of them are actually struggling to get past that problem.
I mean, another way that, you know, some organizations are looking at transforming businesses and workflows is about the use of metadata. So there was a session on driving value from metadata. And just to pick up on something that you said there, interestingly, in that session, or in the context of the report, they highlighted themselves their own organizational challenges about what is it that we're actually trying to get here from this discussion about metadata as well.
It is such a central topic for pretty much any content organization right now. And yet, you know, it's one of those words, it's a little bit like when we all started saying cloud, you know, a few years ago. Yeah, but cloud for what and for why? The same with metadata. And when you really dig into it, a lot of it is about the potential for automation. That's really what it is that broadcasters see as the primary opportunity. And, you know, that's probably where they're kind of grounding the efficiency opportunity as well, is through automation. A lot of that is about speed to market, actually. It's not necessarily about reducing headcount. It's about speed and potential simplicity and kind of elegance of operation. But again, they're really actually struggling to make it real. And the thing that is getting in the way for them is tech debt more than anything else. They've all got so many historic systems that are in place, and trying to replace them, dismantle them, work around them to create these really elegant data workflows, and then from that, you know, the automation that will follow is a huge challenge.
Yeah, there was also a big discussion about modularity of systems and interoperability of systems as well. And that's seen as, on the one hand, trying to simplify the workflows, but there was also recognition that with modularity and perhaps more organizations involved, you actually make it more complex for yourself.
You're so right. You're so right. There was a great moment, actually, one of the sessions that I facilitated, where, you know, having identified modularity as a really important ambition, somebody then said, yeah, but let's be honest, there is no definition of what modularity means. And for the poor old vendors, you know, we talk about modularity, but what are we really talking about when we use that word? What actually is it that we're looking to achieve? What do we think it is? And it was pointed out, yeah, that it's a lovely idea, this idea that you have all these different modules from different vendors that will somehow just sort of click together. But you're then talking about a complex vendor ecosystem. And how does that complex vendor ecosystem get managed? Is it the broadcaster who manages it? Is it the vendors themselves? And actually, that was something that I found very productive in the conversation, that what broadcasters were asking for was in fact for their vendors to identify their kind of own logical partners and almost to come to them as a group to make this much easier. That if we've got vendors who quite openly work together to ensure that their solutions work well together, then that makes it much easier for the broadcaster to embrace what could then be called a modular set of solutions.
Yeah, because I think the phrase that kind of stood out for me was, I think someone referred to it as an integration nightmare.
They did.
That some organizations might have. So moving on to one of the sessions was about optimizing technical resources. And I think this plays into something that we spoke a little bit about. It is about the people. But I thought it was interesting in terms of the broadcasters themselves identifying their own cultural challenges around making the best use of the resources that they have, and actually struggling to articulate strategy around what it is that they actually want to achieve. And without that clarity of strategy, it was very difficult to then make the kind of change that they discuss among themselves that they want to make.
Yeah, that's a really great summary you made there, Craig. That's exactly right. And actually, the modularity conversation kind of surfaced here as well, because really, in the end, this was a conversation about what is it that we feel we need to do ourselves, and what is it that we're looking to third parties to help us with. But you cannot possibly get to a position on that unless you know exactly what it is that you want to achieve. And once again, you're right, there was a lot of self-criticism and self-awareness about strategic clarity, or, you know, the lack of it. there's also a lot of discussion about what they were calling the core. Like, what is it that a broadcaster believes is central and kind of unique about what they have to offer? And should they accept that that's the place in which there has to be complexity because it's special and unique and different, and they kind of have to do it themselves? Now, what's really interesting here is, you know, when we carried that conversation into the wider group with the vendors, I think there's a few raised eyebrows about whether what any particular broadcaster might think is core and unique and special really, really is. I mean, you know, if you think how many broadcasters there are, seriously? Have they all got a unique offer? Really? It's hard to believe. You know, there's still going to be a huge number of similarities. Yeah, there's going to be an area of specialism for them. There's going to be an area of particular focus for them. And, you know, what immediate differences between whether you're commercial or whether you're public service, you know, whether you're really focusing upon your online services at the moment or whether you're not. Yeah, there are these sort of basic things, you know, whether you have advertising, whether you don't. But is there really such a range of uniqueness that it's worth, if you like, sort of accepting a lot of expense and complexity around that particular thing?
Yeah, there was also a discussion that came up. So while this obviously was a European summit, there were people who were attending who were from other geos. And it was interesting in the discussion of the difference in approach to projects, if you like, between the European vendors and how things are done in the US. And again, discussion around RFP process as well. So I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about really what that discussion was around, because there did seem to be quite large differences in the approach between the different geos.
Yeah, that's right. So the assertion was made by some of the vendors in the room that in North America, there is general acceptance by the content provider community that they will engage very early with vendors. They will have conversations about the problems that need solving, and that by the time they get to an RFP process, that process is likely to be lighter weight and it's likely to be clearer in what it's trying to achieve. Whereas in Europe, there's a reluctance, or there's been a failure to have those early conversations, that the whole solution finding process is more likely to be driven through a very cumbersome European procurement process that's very formal and really doesn't invite a focus upon the problem that needs solving, and ends up being very kind of requirements heavy. And actually, it sort of inhibits both parties from really getting to the heart of what they want to achieve. I think many of the European broadcasters accepted that, but there were also a number, and they were both public service and commercial, that are now really making efforts to try and change that, really are trying to find ways to engage much earlier, to have proofs of concept, you know, to particularly the public service ones. They can't get away from European regulation, but they acknowledge that they could still do an awful lot more in advance to make their formal procurement processes then much more effective.
A related topic to optimizing, you know, technical resources was about organizational efficiency. And trying to obviously optimize, you know, what they have and what they're doing. And I think one of the things that came out of that for me was about what needs to be very clear within their own organization is people see change as being driven by perhaps cost cutting, and not enough is being done to articulate actually why this is beneficial. And actually, in some respects, the benefits that could come to employees by changing and adopting new things and adopting new ways of working, because there is a sense that change is being driven by financial reasons as opposed to actual benefits that the business can derive. And I thought it was interesting that people talked about the benefits that employees could then gain from them as well.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I was really struck by a statement made by one person in the broadcast community, which was that organizational change that comes out of cost saving almost always creates the wrong organization. You know, that the motivations are all wrong, and the decisions you make are all wrong for trying to then optimize the business and business and technical workflows, which I thought was a really incisive and interesting observation. And again, they acknowledge that they struggle to get their leadership to really engage with the opportunity for organizational change that can then make the overall operation more elegant, and in so doing, potentially save money, but also make far better use of their people. And really, this is answering that whole challenge about the relationship between people and technology. You know, they're saying that there are really interesting jobs to be done in, if you like, a restructured and rethought set of workflows for a broadcaster that, you know, is appropriately future-facing. But unless we design the organization around those workflows, then we can't, you know, we can't then put people into those really interesting jobs. And at a time when people are thinking about a lot about well-being and morale, this actually becomes really important, because there's nothing better for well-being and morale than doing a job you enjoy. And there's a real sense that there are more enjoyable jobs that are available to people if they could restructure their organizations.
So moving on to the last couple of topics, which are still fairly big ones, I'll leave AI to the end because everyone's talked about AI, so we'll leave that one to the end. But the next one is cloud, and we talked a little bit about cloud earlier on, you know, Mark, where, you know, a lot of people still talking about hybrid. You know, I think there are still, at least the near term, that's the direction that most people are kind of going into. But again, what really struck me from the sort of feedback from the broadcast community was about cost. It was about lack of visibility on cost, not really knowing, you know, what costs would be down the route of implementing cloud workflows. And I felt that was something where obviously the vendor community has not articulated enough the actual benefits that could be driven, where cost actually is worth it, if you like.
Yeah, that is true. But again, this was a space where I think there was a sense that the conversation would have been a bit different if it had been taking place in the US. And I suspect some of that is also to do with the scale of operation of some of those US content organizations. You know, they are really well suited to cloud when they have such absolutely gigantic libraries of content. And for some European broadcasters, there is a very serious question about at what point, at what level of scale do you really start to leverage benefits of cloud? And overall, the message that came back was that you really can't expect many European broadcasters to go all in with cloud anytime soon. And perhaps never. Now, I saw that, you know, so I didn't facilitate that session, but when looking at the output from it, you know, I could see there was some pushback from some of the vendors about that assertion. And I think it's probably fair to say that some of the vendors might have felt that some of the broadcasters were not yet sufficiently well informed about the benefits of cloud and how cloud could operate for their business.
Okay, so let's move on to AI. You know, it's one of these things where at the moment within the industry, you know, you can't move for it. You know, you kind of bump into it everywhere you go. Everyone is talking about it. They're talking about ChatGPT. They're talking about generative AI. They're talking about all of these things. they're talking about the opportunity it can provide, but they're also talking about concerns that they have around it. And I think that's something that really comes out in the report itself. And I think the interesting phrase that I felt was that people felt there was a sense of a lack of maturity for what AI can actually provide in a kind of broadcast in environment. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the concerns that people were expressing. We'll come on to talk, I think, about the regulatory concerns that people have as well. But just that whole sense that this is something that's very new, this is something that we want to know more about before we actually dive into it. I think that was a sense that I got from the broadcasters.
That's right. And it's something that I've noticed about, if you like, a number of areas of innovation and future technology that the media industry gets very interested in and talks about a lot, that when you actually look at those technology spaces, they don't see the opportunity in media and entertainment as being particularly significant. So it's kind of cute. It's like we get very excited by something that's not very excited by us. And, you know, we forget that in the great scale of opportunity for a lot of future-facing technology, media and entertainment is a niche. It's really small. So in the world of AI, very few of the, you know, the big players who are actively seeking to solve the problems that we have in the media space. So quite often we're trying to adapt AI to our world. Now, there are exceptions. From what we were hearing, there's a lot of progress around areas like subtitling and you know, a lot of potential in accessibility services. And that, but that particular space is advancing quite quickly. And it feels like a really appropriate sort of application of AI. But elsewhere, yeah, huge concerns about maturity. And as you've just alluded to, along with that, huge concerns about, particularly from the public service broadcasters, but I think from the commercial ones too, about whether regulatory frameworks are really keeping up with the speed of technology advance.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a general conversation around some of the AI technologies as well. And this came out from the broadcast about transparency, about how the models have been trained. And again, people perhaps not knowing enough about that to then say, well, actually, this is appropriate for us to use in our business.
That's right. Yeah, it was a very helpful statement, I thought, that came out from the conversations, which was that everyone needs to be transparent. So any content organization that is using AI needs to be transparent with their audiences. So that's what they're doing. That's how this particular content has been generated, all this information has been generated. And then equally, any provider of AI services has to be very transparent about exactly how their models were trained and you know, what they are seeking to do. Yeah.
So Mark, there was, you know, lots and lots of really interesting discussion over the course of the 3 days. The report is very detailed. I would urge everyone to obviously go to the DPP website and take a look at the report and explore it in more detail. And quite different topics that were discussed that we've obviously outlined here. So is there one overarching conclusion that that you can kind of come to after the report itself?
Yes, what I really took away from the event was that the European customer community wants to engage with fewer vendor partners in more detail. It's like there is a real appetite for very mature conversations, which really do give partners, you know, an access to the problems and the challenges of those businesses. I think there is a real preparedness to be open about the problems that broadcasters are trying to solve. And I think there's a real preparedness to listen to vendors about the changes that the customer might need to make to their own business in order to drive the benefits that are offered by those products and services from the vendor community. So in that sense, you know, really positive story about a preparedness to have a, you know, really sophisticated and productive relationships, but in the context that those customers still find it a challenge to identify and work with the partners that are most relevant and suitable to them. You know, they still have this huge fear that if ever they put their hand up and say, we'd like to have a conversation about X, they're going to be swamped by suppliers, many of whom really are not suited to working with them at all. So that's what I really took out of, you know, out of the conversations.
Yeah, that's a great kind of summary, I think, for everything that was discussed. So Mark, as you know, there's a question I ask everyone in the podcast. And the last time we spoke, which was probably 6 months ago or so, you were preparing for a wine exam. That was what was keeping you up at the time. So again, moving on now, what is keeping you up at night at the moment?
I would say what's keeping me up at night at the moment is trying to work out what the conversation really needs to be in our industry right now. I do feel as if we're not entirely sure that we've come out of the pandemic and we've got back to something which is starting to feel a bit more like normality. But with that normality, actually, have come consumer behaviors that feel very 2019. They feel very pre-pandemic. And so after all those rather excited conversations about, oh, look, you know, the pandemic has in fact moved our industry forward 10 years in the space of two, that actually we're finding that in many respects, we're right back where we started. And I don't think we've really been honest with ourselves about that fact. And I don't think we've been honest about what that really means for some of the change that we're trying to drive right now. And it's creating a complexity which it's quite hard to unpick, really, to work out, you know, really, what are the key questions that we're supposed to be trying to address right now if we're going to make progress which is appropriate to the moment that we're in?
A very big question indeed, and I would argue that that's really what the podcast is trying to drive towards, identifying the issues we need to address to move the industry forward. It was great chatting to Mark again, and if you want to find out more about the DPP's Future of News report, which I mentioned at the start, then check out the show notes for links to a series of articles about its contents. And you can also check out a recent podcast episode about one of the topics we discussed, AI in journalism. Please like, leave a review, subscribe and share to spread the word about the podcast and also get in touch. I'm on social. CraigAW1969 is my username on both Twitter and Instagram, or you can email us. We are makingthemedia@avid.com. That's all for this episode. Thanks to Mark, to our producer Matt Diggs, and most of all to you for listening. Join us next time for more of the people making the media.